So as we come to the end of this form, this set of conditions, which we call retreat, many of us probably notice that the mind starts to think, and maybe even not even just as we come close, maybe even at the beginning, the mind starts to think about what about after this retreat? What about when we leave here? And several of you have raised the question and have pointed out how, in a sense, the conditions here are artificial. And of course, the conditions here are very different from the conditions in our daily lives. And so here in the retreat, we cultivate and create an environment which allows us the opportunity to look at ourselves in a way that we're not really familiar with. And one of the reasons that we're not familiar with it is because in our regular daily lives, we don't have the conditions which support that. And so here we have these conditions, and we've been in this retreat, and for many of us, there has been a considerable amount of settling, of quieting, of stilling, of looking within, of coming to some understanding, of beginning to see things in new ways, in different ways. And all of this has been supported by the environment here, with the care from the managers, with the silence, with the spaciousness of the place, and with the contact with nature here. And of course, when we leave this retreat, when we leave this retreat center, when we leave this set of conditions, we move into a very different set of conditions. And because of that, of course, our responses are going to be different. Our feelings are going to be different. Our mind states are going to be different. Because we're not separate from the environment. We're not separate from what goes on around us. And yet, at the same time, the environment around us and the others around us aren't separate from us either. And so the interaction and the influence does go both ways. And at times it can feel like, well, it's just me. What difference can I make? But each one of us as individuals really can make a difference. And sometimes that difference is so small that it's not noticeable to us. It's not obvious. But each one of us as individuals can make a difference. But with the change in conditions, there will be a change in the experience. And the meditation practice is to not try and create anything special. It's not to try and hold on to anything special. It's not about getting something here which we can take with us. And what we have here with the silence and with the quieting and the stilling and the insight and the wisdom coming from within, to try and drag that along with us into that world out there could be a tremendous amount of struggle. And so the practice is not to get something here to take with us, but rather to bring mindfulness to each moment and to know each moment just as it is. So in the transition, I would really encourage remembering this mindfulness. So when we begin talking, we begin listening, we begin interacting with others, in going home to our families, remember that all of this doesn't mean that we can't be mindful. Each moment, each event is an opportunity for mindfulness. And when we bring mindfulness, we can still be bringing the mindfulness, the awareness, some of the clarity, some of the understanding. And with mindfulness, all of that is accessible, whatever the conditions. The feelings come and go. The feelings change. The mind states come and go. They change. The emotions come and go. They change. The people we interact with come and go. The environment changes. But we can still be mindful. In leaving the retreat and in going back to our home situations over the next few hours of the day, it's really helpful to remember as much as possible to go slowly. Remembering slowly, gently, step by step. When we came to the retreat, many of us noticed that in the first day or two, there really was a sense of settling in. We came into the retreat with really busy and noisy, and certainly we experienced it here in the meditation hall. Lots of movement and activity and restlessness and lots of tiredness and some snoring here and there and dullness. And it took some time for some of that to kind of settle through. So there's a settling in period. And in leaving the retreat, there's a kind of a settling out period, settling into the new conditions. And so I would really encourage you to be sensitive to that, to be sensitive, to be aware that it is a change of conditions, and again, to allow for a settling in. That settling in and that going slowly can take many different forms and can show in many different forms. And so one suggestion as a contribution to this is to really be mindful in going home, just to go as slowly and as gently as possible and not to immediately start opening the mail and checking the answering machine and turning on the computer to check the email and just immediately jumping right back into our old habits and tendencies and the old familiar ways, but to really bring mindfulness and to go slowly and to allow ourselves a chance to resettle. In going home, going back to our families, to our friends, there may be a real urge to tell them all about this retreat. Just to say how wonderful it was and how great it was and fantastic, and they should really go and do a retreat and it would really be good for them. And there may also be the real urge to say it was terrible. I don't know why anybody would ever want to go and do that. And I don't think you should do that at all. But this urge to tell all about it. And with that, a couple of things. One is encouragement in talking about the retreat and telling others about it. As much as possible, to think in terms not so much of talking about the retreat or telling about the retreat or trying to describe the retreat, but talking about your experience. Talking about what you benefited from the retreat, what you felt, what you learned. Talking about how the experience was for you. And this can very often say more to them about the retreat than trying to describe the retreat. Remembering that the retreat is just a label that's given to all the conditions, all the circumstances, including the conditions within each one of us. And so because of that, each one of us will probably describe the retreat in a different way. And so using our own experience. And the other thing in talking to people and telling people about it is to remember that sometimes they may not be interested. And as I mentioned last night in the Eightfold Path, one is wise speech. And wise speech means speaking truthfully, but it also means speaking appropriately. And so in speaking, having some sensitivity and having some listening also, and having some sensitivity to what the person is really interested in and what the person is really capable of listening to and understanding, and whether the person really wants to know about it. So just in the transition over the next few hours and the next day or two, just going as slowly and mindfully as possible and step by step and really allowing yourselves a resettling and being aware that the conditions are different and the experience will be different.
So Norman referred to the question that comes up so much, especially at the end of the retreat, about how can I keep what I've got here? And it's an understandable response to the time here, and it's worth looking into. Like when we see that what has grown out of this time and in this time here, that it's dependent on the conditions that are here. Well, maybe a worthwhile question is, what can I do to cultivate a little bit of the conditions that support understanding, that support wisdom, that support compassion? So there are lots of different things that have contributed to our time here. And one of them is the silence. And one of the, you know, we go home and there's so much talking and there's so much reading. You know, we sit eating a meal and we sit with the newspaper open, or we sit with the radio on or the TV on. Or we get home from work and the first thing that we do is to call a friend or to turn on the TV or to turn on the radio or sit down and talk with friends or family. So I it's probably not appropriate to go home and be completely silent unless one is living alone. But just to remember that this is a major contributing factor. And so just look into your own life. And where can I perhaps introduce a little bit of this? At home, when we had a home, Norman and I used to have every once in a while we'd say, okay, this morning is quiet. We would just agree, we're not going to talk. We would go about and do whatever we had to do, but we wouldn't speak. And it was lovely. And it's a little hard to do this with children, but maybe. Maybe one mealtime. Maybe just one period of the day. Or just resisting the urge to turn on the radio, turn on the TV, or pick up the newspaper. Go for a walk. And just not use that time to plan or to get somewhere, but just to be with whatever is. The sitting practice. That is so, so, so important. And the question often arises, how much, how often? What do I have to do? And I think this is where wise intention and wise action is important. There are no thou shalt or thou shalt not. This idea of wise intention and wise action and all of the wises, what that really does is the Buddha was saying, it depends. You have to ask yourself, what's realistic? What's possible given the conditions of my life at this time? So for some of you, it may be just fine to get up in the morning and spend 45 minutes doing sitting meditation. Wonderful! Maybe for some of you, a half an hour in the morning and half an hour in the evening. Oh, that's wonderful! Maybe some of you have little children. And it's hard to find time in the day. One teacher once said during a retreat when she had little children, the only time I could find during the day was when I went to the toilet. And so I would just lock the door and I would stay there a little longer, and that would be my sitting meditation. Another teacher has suggested, before you get out of bed in the morning, just lying there quietly with the intention to be mindful. 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Or also when you get into bed at night. Maybe sitting at the table in a mealtime, just 5 minutes. Just being mindful of eating, mindful of sounds, mindful of contact with the cushion. When you go, if you do work and it's sitting, you sit down at a desk and then you're going to start to work. Take 5 minutes. Make that practice. The continuity of practice is so important. It's more important, if you can, if that's your intention, to practice every day than it is to practice one time a week for an hour. It's that continuity. It's kind of a reminder. It's a reminder of that mindfulness is so valuable. And it's a good kind of proliferation. It's a good kind of spreading. You sit, and then it affects so much of the day and so much of how we are in the world. And if you look at your life, and what you see is, this is impossible. How am I ever going to find time to sit? How am I ever going to find time to be quiet? How can this be? Well, this is where inquiry is helpful. Maybe it's time to look into life as you're living it. Is there something I can give up so that I can make time for what is important, if this is what the intention is? So this inquiry can be very much a part of our lives. This right action, this wise action, and wise intention. If you found the walking meditation to be particularly helpful, to bring that into your life, even if it's walking in the kitchen while preparing a meal, just be aware of the contact of the feet with the floor. Mindfulness can be brought in to anything we do. Thich Nhat Hanh, a wonderful teacher from Vietnam, talks about mindfulness of washing dishes. And he says, if we're thinking about the cup of tea that we're going to have after we're washing dishes, you know, how do we know? How do we know the experience of washing dishes? That minute is gone. If while we're having our cup of tea, if we're thinking about what we have to buy at the store after that, we've missed that cup of tea. So this is true about the whole day. The practice is about wakefulness, about being awake and present in every moment. Many people find being with nature, being with the flowers and trees, supportive. If that's important to you, then try to seek that out. But what was beautifully said this morning, the real teacher, the real silence is within. So one of the conditions here on retreat is the teaching. And there are wonderful books. They're wonderful books, and there are tapes available. And I think you might have seen a book list out on the table at breakfast time. And at the back of each book, there's always a bibliography, or there's always suggested reading. So you start with one book, and then you look in the back of that book, and there's a whole list of other books to choose from. And just to keep the teaching alive. Keep the teaching alive. And when you're reading, not to devour the book, but do the reading with mindfulness too. Maybe read one paragraph at a time and then reflect on that and see how it can affect your life, your relationships, your work. Slowly, slowly. I find a good time to do that is before going to bed. Just read a page. Just read a page and reflect on that. Another thing that is a way of keeping the practice alive is by doing service. So much of what the teaching is about interdependence. is about seeing the interconnection of all life. And so not only to bring the mindfulness to self, but to let the wisdom flower and touch other people. Let the generosity of heart and mind touch other people. And this doing service can be done in little ways as well as big ways. A smile is a wonderful service. A kind word, an offer of support to someone who's ill or to someone who's elderly, as well as the more conventional, usual ways of offering time and service to many different groups. It's a way of really seeing the interconnection and how in giving we receive so much. But to keep the heart alive, to keep the heart open, that's really a wonderful support. And there's also retreats. And a retreat can be an organized retreat like this. It's a wonderful way of keeping the practice alive and keeping the teachings alive. There's also smaller retreats. There's also a retreat that you can do by yourself. You can say, okay, I'm taking this morning, or I'm taking this whole day or this whole weekend, either by myself or maybe inviting a friend. And write up a schedule, sitting and walking and maybe listening to a tape. Unplug the telephone and give that time to yourself. If there isn't, oh, Norman's going to talk about that. It spreads. Just trying to think if there's anything really important else that I wanted to say. I think one of the most important things, I've touched on it a little bit, but in the Eightfold Path, how it begins with understanding, and how that understanding touches and affects everything else that we do. And there's understanding and wisdom that brought you here. And there's understanding and wisdom that has flowered in each one of you in its own way here. And if some question or some problem or some struggle arises in life, at your work, in your relationships, with yourself, just to allow the space, allow the time to just be still, to just be quiet. And let the wisdom reveal itself. It's always there.
With the daily sitting, one thing that's helpful that I don't think Peggy mentioned is to have one place. Just to have one place in your home that's for sitting, and it can just be a corner of a room where your cushion or your chair sits. Or if you're really lucky, you could have a meditation room. But just to have a place that's only for silence and stillness, and not a place where you go to read the newspaper or to listen to music or to hang out, but just a place for stillness and silence and reflection, contemplation, and looking within ourselves. And that having that place can serve as an ongoing reminder, so that every time you're near that place, you'll see it, and it's just a reminder. And also in using one spot continuously, it builds up an energy of stillness and silence will develop there, just as here in the meditation hall over these days, an atmosphere of stillness and silence and being within has developed. And so having that. With regard to retreats, a couple of you brought up in the go-around about our coming back. When are we coming back? And I would like to say that we would like very much to come back. The tradition, the way it works, is that the teachings are given where invited. So a basic principle for teaching is that you don't try to teach. You don't try to teach someone unless they've asked you to teach.
Don't send out a resume.
and so our coming back is dependent on an invitation from retreat organizers. And so just thinking of service, one form of service, if you'd like us to come back, maybe to offer to be an organizer. But also, if you would like us to come back, and we would like to, but to let the committee, let the organizing committee know. Send them a letter. On this retreat, as on all retreats, a part of the support that we receive, two aspects of the support. One is the support from everyone else. So each one of us supporting each other with the silence, with the commitment, with the dedication, with the presence, with the effort. And we can feel that support. And we can recognize that it's so much easier to practice with a group and to engage in this with a group than to do it on our own. And another aspect of the support which we have on retreats is the support of the managers and the cooks and the teachers. And so we recognize the value of that support. And so in going to our daily lives and leaving the retreat, in life outside of and after retreats, between retreats, to see the value of support and to look in our lives and to find where we can get that support and what kinds of support we may need. And so with regard to regular practice and to sustaining the inquiry and the meditation process, finding like-minded people and really making the effort to find these people and to connect in ways that really do support us. And so there are groups all over Israel that meet regularly, once a week or once a month or whatever, and you know, small groups of people coming together to do some meditation, to listen to tapes, to do some reading, to have some discussion. And I really encourage you to find these groups. I don't know, David, is there a list?
Yeah.
So there's a list in the dining room of these groups, and if you can't find a group on the list that's near where you live, perhaps you can connect with someone else here who lives nearby and start your own group. Just coming together, two people come together once a week, and spend some time sitting together or walking together and do some reading together, or have some discussion about your experience and about your understanding, and then maybe invite others to come, and so you can start your own group. But really making it a priority to find that ongoing support, because this Western culture, and it's not just in Israel, it's in the Western culture and unfortunately increasing in the Eastern culture as well, doesn't give much support for that. The major message coming through is acquisition and getting and gaining and accumulating and selfishness, and it can be very easy to begin to feel alone and to feel isolated from society. And so to find the support, and also on retreat with the teachers, when we have questions, when we have difficulties, we can go to the teachers for guidance and for support. And so in our daily lives, also seeing what kind of guidance, what kind of support may we need. And meditation, the meditation is a very powerful process, a very powerful tool for coming to understand ourselves. But meditation isn't the only answer for everything. And very often in the meditation, as many of you have noticed, in the process of the meditation, we really connect with real dilemmas in our life. And the question comes up, well, how do I work with this? How do I deal with this? And in a sense, meditation isn't intended to be a kind of therapy or a method, or it's not intended to provide the answers or the solutions to our questions and our difficulties and our problems in our relationships, in our jobs, in our business, and so on. But what it can do is bring awareness to it. So when we recognize these problems, these difficulties in our life, these stresses in our life, we can use the meditation to bring awareness to it and to become aware of where the difficulties are, where the confusions are, where the doubts are. Become aware of where we're holding. Become aware of where the aversions are. And seeing, getting some sense of and some understanding of where we are and what our relationship is to life. And sometimes just in this process, just in the process of being with this and inquiring into this, something will come, something will show a different way of seeing the situation. And in many ways, meditation is a process of learning to see things in a different way. It's learning to break out of the habits and tendencies of our minds to see things like this, and to open, and to be able to see in different ways. And so sometimes just in looking at the dilemmas, the questions, the issues of our life, this happens very naturally and very easily. Sometimes not. And so to remember that meditation doesn't always provide the answer or the solution for everything, and that the meditation can bring us the awareness to make the wise effort to seek support and to seek help from other sources. So really making an effort to find these supports in our life in a variety of ways, and this support becomes our community, our sangha. The Pali, the Sanskrit word is sangha, which means, it literally means gathering. And it's generally translated or interpreted as community of like-minded people. So it's a gathering, which to me gives the image of coming together, and really coming together, gathering up together. And so there is that ongoing support. So the meditation very much becomes a part of everyday life, and very much can be integrated into our daily life in many, many ways. And so keeping the interest, keeping the inquiring, and keeping the inspiration, just to keep bringing mindfulness. And in that discovering within ourselves the beauty and the joy and the wisdom and the peace. Okay, so we'd like to just finish with a loving kindness, a metta meditation. So let's just find a comfortable sitting position. So just checking posture, just sitting comfortably, being relaxed, being settled, being present, and bringing the attention to the breath, to the body, becoming aware of body just breathing, of life happening and showing itself in the breath. And bringing the awareness now to the heart area, into the chest and the heart area, and just becoming aware of sensations, experience, lack of sensations. Just connecting with what the experience is in the heart area. And becoming aware of how I'm feeling within myself, about myself, right in this moment. Being aware of any thoughts, feelings, emotions about myself, within myself. Whatever these thoughts, feelings, emotions may be, extending towards myself, sending to myself, within myself, metta. And each one of us silently saying to ourselves and sending to ourselves expressions of metta, whatever expressions of metta we're able to in this moment. Expressions of friendliness, of kindness, of generosity, of openness. And now allowing these expressions of metta, and allowing the heart to open, to gradually expand throughout this room, to include everyone in this room. Everyone who has made this retreat possible, who has given me support, inspiration, everyone in this room making this moment just as it is. And extending to all those in this room who we share this moment with very intimately. Metta. Loving kindness. Friendliness. Each one of us in our own way, in our own phrases, our own words, extending these wishes. And allowing the heart to open, extending the wishes of metta, of loving kindness and friendship, to our families and friends. Opening the heart and welcoming in family and friends in a way that we know that even though there may be distance between us at this moment, we are together. We're not separate. Allowing the hearts to open, extending metta to all the strangers who made it possible for us to be here. The organizers, the people who run this center, the people who grew the food and transported it. And as if we reflect on this, realizing that there are countless people who make this moment possible, who make this retreat possible, opening the hearts to all these people. And wishing for all these people metta. Opening the hearts, extending the metta to include all the people within Israel and our neighbors and countries around Israel. Some with whom there's friendship, some with whom there's not. Difficulties, tensions. And some who we don't know. And whatever these feelings and emotions may be, extending the wish for metta, for friendship, for loving kindness, for peace. Opening heart and mind to say shalom to all these people, the friendly, the unfriendly, the unknown, the known, the near and the far. And to all the living beings in the air, on the earth, in the earth, and in the waters. Wishing for them also metta, friendship, peace. May all beings live in peace. May all beings live in harmony. May all beings live in freedom. So thank you all again for all your efforts, all your support for us, for each other, for yourselves, and thank you for the opportunity for us to be here and to meet with you all and to get you to know many of you, and hope to see you all again. Thank you.